Today's episode of the Film Stage Show is brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. For your free 30-day trial, go to mubi.com/filmstage. Back, ladies and gentlemen, to a brand new episode of the Film Stage Show, the movie review podcast for filmstage.com. As always, I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan, and with me today to talk about the newest Pixar film, Coco, we have Michael Snydell.
Hello!
We also have Bill Graham. Or maybe we don't.
Sorry. Woohoo! I was on mute.
All right. Well, yes, as I said, we are here today to talk about Coco, the newest film from Pixar Studios, and that's what we're here for. You bought a ticket, you're gonna walk in, you're gonna listen to us talk about Coco. Usual stuff to get through before that. Follow us on Twitter at Film Stage Show, search for us on Facebook, look for The Film Stage Show, and of course you can email us podcast@thefilmstage.com. And find us on iTunes to give us a comment and rating. We are brought to you by the support of listeners like you, to crib a phrase from public radio. Go to patreon.com/thefilmstageshow to become part of our patron network. For as little as $1 an episode, you can help us create awesome new content. We're going to be doing classic movie reviews soon, so you're going to get one of those a month, care of the people who've already given us money. And when you give, you will also be granted access to our super secret Slack channel, which will allow you to talk to us live and in person. And, of course, you will be entered in to get all kinds of cool stuff in raffles that we hold seemingly every week now. We're also brought to you by Mubi, the online streaming cinema. Mubi introduces a new film each day, and you have 30 days to watch, which means that you have a constantly rotating selection of 30 films for your viewing pleasure. You can download these things to your mobile device, watch them on the go. You can watch them on your PC or your laptop, watch them on your iPad, your iPhone, or whatever non-Apple device equivalent of those you have. You can also watch them on your smart TV. Mubi is the greatest way to expand your cinematic palette. Gives you lots of great options, cinema big and small from all around the world. And because it keeps its selection narrow, you never get stuck in a quagmire of too many choices. So if you would like a free 30-day trial of Mubi, that is the lifespan of one of their movies, all you have to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage, and we will give you a free 30-day trial so that you too can understand the wonder that is Mubi. Again, that's mubi.com/filmstage. So, gentlemen, it has been, I don't know how long it's been since last we talked. I can't remember when we...
The day before No, that's not true at all.
No, that's impossible.
That's Sunday before Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Because we did the thing with the Justice League. And then we did Untamed.
Yes, we did.
We put out in very quick succession two drastically different episodes. And now we're here to talk about Coco, which everyone should be excited for. It's a Pixar film. It involves a story about Day of the Dead. And Pixar did it right. They had people of Mexican descent working on this film, all the voice actors are of Mexican or Hispanic descent. So this is good.
I thought it might be a fun thing to mention too. I don't know. Were you guys familiar with the original controversy when this film was first announced?
Absolutely
I did a little
not.
Bit of research on this. Okay, so when this film was first...
I just came across it.
Oh, okay.
Go ahead.
So when they... shortly after they announced this film, they were originally going with the title Dia de los Muertos.
Oh, right. And they wanted to trademark that.
Yes.
Well, so let's kind of touch on that a little bit, because I think some of this has kind of gotten a little out of hand. They didn't necessarily want to trademark that name specifically, but if they have a movie called Dia de los Muertos, all of a sudden that starts to kick off a lot of things kind of in the trademark and in the copyright realm.
I am sure that they would have selectively enforced that to avoid toys and things of that.
Or activist groups became aware of specifically trademarks that listed a variety, everything from, you know, lunchboxes to video games.
Right.
And immediately became very worried.
Yeah, that's an understandable thing to be worried about.
But I'm sorry, Bill. Go ahead.
It was me, actually. I was going to say, not to get too political, but doesn't Donald Trump own the trademark on the term Central Park?
Are you kidding?
I swear to God. I don't think I dreamed this. I'm pretty sure that he owns the trademark on the word cluster Central Park. And the article that told me this specifically said that he was unable to actually make any money off of it because he's just inept.
Okay,
I'm looking this up now.
Okay. I was about to say, somebody Trump, better fucking
Trump.
Trump,
The Week, Talking Points Memo, CBS News, it's Donald Trump. Yeah, he owns the trademark of the name Central Park.
But, the last thing I wanted to mention about this, though, so that was a controversy, and one of the most, of course I can't find his fucking name. All right, one of the most... vocal people was a political cartoonist named Lalo Alcaraz. Jeez. Or Lalo. Yeah. I apologize for pronunciation. But the point being, he was actually a political cartoonist who did a whole series then about Disney. The biggest one was a print he did of Muerte Mouse, which is this skeleton mouse. And the subtitle on this print was Muerte Mouse is coming to take over your culture. It's a pretty great little picture.
I hear Muerte Mouse and I think of Dead Mouse's non-union Mexican equivalent.
But anyways, so Disney reached out to him and asked him to be a cultural consultant on the film, which is one of... among the things you already mentioned, Brian, in terms of it being almost entirely Hispanic Latino cast, except for John Ratzenberger, I thought that was kind of an interesting thing to mention.
Yeah, though they reached out and they found members of the community to be a part of this, especially the people who were critical of them, because they really wanted to do this one right.
Because Disney has a great history with racial stereotypes.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah, you know, what was it? There was Aladdin with the cut off your ear if they don't like your face. I'm sure that someone was angry about Mulan.
All of Pocahontas.
Yeah, Pocahontas, not great. What was the other one? The Princess and the Frog.
Oh, yeah.
People not exactly thrilled about that. So this time and it wasn't Disney, but people weren't happy with the voice casting in Kubo and the Two Strings either.
No.
Yeah. So this time
they were very hyper aware of that.
Yes.
I lost you guys.
Wait, is he back?
Am I back?
Yay. Yes. Are you back?
All right. Cool.
Back in black.
God damn this internet.
All right. So we're going to talk about Coco, but guys, before we do that,
we have nothing else to talk about. Nothing else.
I just want to start us off with a little something. I'm going to play something before I play the trailer for Coco. So just 1 second.
Can't believe they're playing these cool matches, man. These were legendary.
Camel clutch!
It's not a camel clutch!
That is a camel clutch!
Hey, gentlemen! Hi! I just like a moment of your time.
You can't turn that off! You're watching that!
I have a word that's going to change your life.
The answer is already.
Okay. So that is the beginning of a full episode of the Fox TV show New Girl. It clocks in at just over 21 minutes. I would like everyone right now to imagine that you're sitting there listening to this podcast And right before we start to talk about Coco, instead, I just play you a full episode of the Fox TV show New Girl, starring Zooey Deschanel. A full episode. Without any warning, without any explanation. And then, only after you've listened to that entire episode of New Girl, you get to listen to us talk about Coco. Because people in theaters across the United States got to experience exactly that when they went to see Coco in theaters. There was a short, I use quotation marks very heavily around that, that played before Coco. It was Olaf's Frozen Adventure, I think?
Yep.
Is the title of it?
Yep.
And yes. It is over 20 minutes long. And it has five songs. And a full plot.
How much did this thing cost? Like, that's what I want to know.
Here's Bill, I'm glad you originally asked that. I don't have an answer for how much it cost, but it was originally produced as a half-hour ABC holiday special.
Okay, so it probably didn't cost too much then. But
or
yeah,
it cost
okay,
a shit
wow.
ton. I don't know, but it was originally supposed to air on television. As because like there was a Trolls holiday thing that like my nephew and niece couldn't wait to watch, and it was like, you know, a half an hour thing. They got the original voice cast back, and but that aired on TV.
You've heard one of the reasons why this kind of maybe was like put in front of Coco.
Because God is cruel and unloving.
No, so it's pretty simple. I think Disney was basically afraid that if they had a film about Dia de los Muertos, that it wasn't going to pull in enough white people. And so they decided, you know what white people love? That Frozen shit. So
okay,
let's just slap that thing in front of Coco.
I recall when they first said there's going to be a Frozen short in front of Coco. And I was like, I don't understand what everyone's upset about. Because people like Frozen. And so,
sure.
You know, why not? Let's give them a 5-minute short. And instead of the Pixar short, we have a five little thing where, like, maybe Olaf loses his nose and the reindeer eats it and they have to find him a new one. And we get hilarious things where, like, it's a trumpet or a potato. But instead, we get a full fucking television episode that involved this goddamn snowman running around all of Arendelle, trying to find holiday traditions for the two women who he is irrationally
Elsa
in
and
love
Anna.
With. And,
yeah.
And it's just, it didn't stop. I went to an 8:45 showing of Coco. At 9:30, I pulled my phone out of my pocket to text my wife, this goddamn Frozen short is still happening to me. It was insane. And I just, like, the story is fucking bananas. And I can't wrap my head around why they thought this was a good idea. Because Michael and I were talking about this on Slack earlier. It ends in, like, three different places.
Three?
Yeah.
You could have easily cut this thing down to be 12 minutes. Like 7 minutes long.
I want to mention something real quick, because if the listeners have kind of noted that you specifically mentioned you and Mike were talking about this, is because I skipped out on that shit. I had heard that it was 20 minutes plus. I was like, no, sir, do not want any part of that. I will watch that later at my own leisure, not in front of another fucking movie. And
they'll never watch it.
Yeah, probably not by now. I had heard it's terrible, and I heard it's completely unnecessary. And so I just decided to do some online shopping in the lobby while waiting for this short to end. And I kept peeking in and realizing that it kept going. And I was like, wow, this is a full bore thing. And it looked decent from the clips I saw, but it was definitely like the Josh Gad show. like, oh my god.
In the worst way possible. Wait,
Bill, did you stay for trailers and then leave when it started and then come back?
So what I did was I ordered my pizza. I went out to the bathroom. Trailers had just started. I came back, saw a couple of trailers. I watched the what is it, Wrinkle in Time trailer, and was thoroughly confused because I haven't not read that book, and I was like, what the shit is this? And then I left, talked to some friends outside, came back in, saw the short was finally playing, and then started a timer, and then like every like 5 minutes I kind of peeked in.
Bill, it sounds like you lived an entire life between buying your ticket and finally getting to see this movie.
Pretty much.
So here's...
You know, Brian, though, he lived that life without having to watch the film.
Right, he lived it to the fullest. He went to the bathroom, he fucking got some food, he talked to friends, he did Christmas shopping. I, like an idiot, sat in my goddamn chair and stared at that fucking screen, unblinking, trying... I told my wife the full narrative of this Frozen short last night, and at some point, I underwent a psychotic break. Because I was telling her about it, and I'm like, and so he's being chased by wolves, and then the reindeer goes back to Kristoff, and the reindeer does this asinine pantomime, and then the girls are like, oh no, Olaf's lost in the woods and being attacked by wolves. And then it suddenly dawned on me, like, why is anyone ever concerned about Olaf? He is an immortal, magic-based snowman. Nothing can kill him. We have seen him get impaled, dismembered, melted, and reconstituted. He is a kid-friendly version of the T-1000. If the wolves were to eat him, nothing would happen. And yet these people, this entire fucking country... takes to the hills to find him because a snowman could be lost in the cold and the snow, which is like dropping a goldfish into a body of water and worrying about it. Except that a goldfish is an immortal being.
This is amazing.
Okay.
I have to mention one thing. Listeners, if you were waiting for me to have my psychic break, right? This probably would have been the time for that to happen had I not known that it was 20 minutes long. Like, if can you imagine if I went into this movie, I didn't know it was 20 minutes long and I sat through that shit, I would have just had a meltdown. I would have just been like, this is not acceptable. I have a workout after this I have to get to. I have shit to do. And I would have just been like, I would have been real mad if I had to sit through all of that.
A woman in my theater legitimately got up, went out, and asked if they were in the right theater.
I've heard this happen multiple times from various people just being like, hey, I bought a ticket to Coco. Is there a new Frozen movie going on right now?
Yeah. Like, I think you're like, playing the wrong movie, or maybe I'm in the wrong theater. Like, this, you know how I told that story about, I think it was The Accountant, maybe, like when that entire family was behind me for the last 20 minutes and didn't realize they were in the wrong theater?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah. It was
I can't remember what movie that was, but yeah.
It was like that. But this time they actually got up and asked, but they were in the right theater. So now I'm like, yeah, no wonder you didn't realize that you were in the wrong movie. Because sometimes they just play a TV episode's worth of some fucking other thing before you get what you paid for.
Okay. Yeah. So
Frozen, Olaf's Frozen Adventure, fucking terrible. I don't know when
Mike,
the next
one is. What do you want to say, over. Mike?
No, I want to... So... All right, so let's put aside, I completely agree, Brian, but I just want to briefly talk about what the actual content of this thing is.
Okay.
So depending on how you feel about Frozen, I mean, Frozen was something that honestly was fine when I saw it, and obviously as it's become a phenomenon and, having to hear cousins and family members and having to hear Let It Go, and all of those things are inescapable, and it's nearly impossible for those things not to be incredibly grating. But I guess the thing that really worries me is I already know a Frozen 2 is, I think it's coming next year. But what I find so, I just find this short so baffling on so many levels that, like, I don't know, maybe I'm giving this too much credit, but, like, you know, Frozen, I thought, had a relatively interesting dynamic with the sisters in terms of, you know, at least of someone, of her being dangerous. And, you know, that is something that can be played on. Seeing this short and seeing what they think the future is, like, I'm kind of baffled what they think Frozen is, like, beyond the point of the fact that this should end about literally five different times. Like, there is literally moments where it could so easily just be the final stinger before credits, and then it keeps going. Like, it's bizarre. But, like, I now kind of, it now makes me retroactively wonder, granted, I haven't seen a lot of these broadcast shorts. I have admittedly seen the Toy Story. I think it's called, but not Planet of Terror. It's something, it's like a Halloween 20 minutes with Toy Story characters. That's pretty good. And, you know, that is good because it maintains the personalities of the characters. But I am now, I have heard this specifically be described as a transitional thing between Frozen and Frozen 2. And I'm wondering, like, now what Disney thinks this brand is beyond a brand. And it's just, it's a weird thing because Disney, of course, does a lot of craven things, but they don't really push animated films out the door. Whatever you think of Moana, whatever you think of, not Big Hero 6, Wreck-It Ralph. You know, like the last couple, I mean, they have been something. They've always doubled as merchandise, and I am completely rambling now. But I guess my point is just that this short not only made me want to die, but it also made me wonder, who do they even think these characters are? And if they're not willing to make it the only conflict that was even relatively interesting in the first movie, if they're going to completely neuter that, what is the point of bringing these characters back?
I honestly don't know, because like you would, the sisters are relegated to, like, I would say a C plot in this. And like Olaf is ostensibly working towards their benefit, but he is doing so in a way that, and I'm not, you know,
it's so redundant.
I'm not going to talk about like character complexity and consistency with relation to an anthropomorphic bewitched snowman, but he was so much more vaguely competent in Frozen that I'm starting to wonder if all of the times his carrot has gotten shoved through the back of his head has given him some form of brain damage.
They got like a D-level Jerry Lewis now.
Yeah. It's terrible.
So what I heard this compared to is basically that this is the Cars franchise of Disney now.
Well, it's hard to tell,
just
because
it's going
to
be like, hey, you know, let's like, just run with this.
You know, I'm always like, when something's broadcast on TV, I'm like, you know, that's not canon. That's not a real thing. You know, it's specifically for the television audience, which is traditionally less engaged, less discerning, and only half tuned in. Like, you know, it's fine. If you need some shit to take care of your kids for a half an hour, you could probably do worse than this. If it was on your TV and you weren't paying for it and it wasn't keeping you from seeing Coco. But like, this is crazy. And the other thing is, it's like the Pixar shorts are like so bouncy and inventive. Like, I still will sometimes,
even when,
like,
I don't like them, they're still doing even something formally.
Lava.
Not,
Lava,
we're not talking
no
about
one
Lava.
Will ever, no one will ever like badmouth Lava again, because now we know how bad it can get. Like, I liked Lava. I was moved by Lava. I've stood up for Lava.
Whoa.
And now
Whoa.
I don't feel like I have to anymore, because if someone says Lava, I will simply say Olaf's fucking Frozen Adventure. Is like, here's two of them. Choose one. Which would you prefer, sir or madam? And like, I will still sometimes go and watch like Lifted or whatever the one is with the storks.
Yeah, Lifted's great.
You know?
Yes.
The storks
one. Yeah, the cloud. Yeah, the cloud. I love
the umbrella one. These are really specific, but yeah.
And And I like, so I genuinely look forward to these shorts, like, before a movie. And so
especially in front of the Pixar movies, because for so long they were so good.
Yeah, they're always at least inventive and unexpected, you know, like, or a good show of the technology if, like, you're not into lava. But, like, that's a gorgeous one. It's good looking. But, like, Lifted, yes. The one with the superheroes where the kid and his dad are, like, praying and watching TV.
Oh, yes, like,
those are some great fucking short films. And I can't believe I'm cursing so much when talking about children's entertainment. But instead, we get Olaf's Frozen Adventure, which is the laziest goddamn thing I've ever seen. And what makes it worse is that it does the tried and true thing that I thought, like, died out in the 90s, where it's like, you know, it's Christmas, let's just fucking have our cartoon characters, like, celebrate secular Christmas, which doesn't make any sense, because, like, the Flintstones would have these, and it's like, but they're cavemen, Christ won't be born for another 10,000 years, what are they celebrating? And in the Frozen universe, it's like, so do they have a god? Because this woman gave life to a snowman who is learning and growing and has memory and agency.
This is starting to get into Cars territory where people are like, wait, so how are cars born and are they sentient? Did they kill all the humans? Is this a post-apocalypse? What is going on? Like,
first
why
of all,
do
I love the way you say apocalypse. Second of all, like, I legitimately struggled with this because I'm like, she gave life to that snowman. So could she do that to other snowmen? And then the question is, where does his soul live? So, like, if we were to melt him and throw him into the ocean, would he be able to animate the entirety of the seas? Like, would he become Poseidon?
Jesus.
Like, and these are the types of things I was thinking about while I was getting bludgeoned to death with the shitty songs that were playing in this thing.
There's not even a half memorable one in here. Okay,
no, I literally can't recall a single, like, song. I know there's the one. I know there's the one about the troll dude. I know there's the one about how everyone's Christmas traditions suck because Olaf's a dick now. And then
this is a much better experience than watching this. I can tell you that right now. Like, listening to you.
Anyway,
sorry.
Yeah, I think I can't. I'm so angry about this. And so, like I said, when people were like, oh, of course they're putting a Frozen short because they're afraid the white people won't go, it's like, well, you know, that's not bad. Like, if you have to sprinkle a little bit of frozen sugar on top of the cocoa cupcake just to get people to eat it because they're racist, I don't give a shit. But when it's 5 minutes long, it actively detracts from the movie-going experience.
You mean when it's 20 minutes long?
Yeah, when it's 20 minutes long. If it was five minutes long, you could suffer through anything for 5 minutes, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But 20 minutes is the part where you start to die. Like, what? Like, your brain can go, like, 10 minutes without oxygen before it starts to die? That's double. Olaf's Frozen Adventure is double that. But anyway, we're done talking about it. Let's talk about the good movie now. Spoiler alert for my opinion. Here is the trailer, actually, for Coco.
Guys, we need to make a time.
I'm sorry, what?
We need to make a timestamp. So
yeah,
if people actually want to skip our opinion on Frozen Olaf's Adventure,
part of the episode. That's the best part of the episode. That's where it's all going down. Anyway, here's the trailer. Now that Mike is done interrupting, for Coco, which is directed by Lee Unkrich and Adrian Molina, and has the voice talent of Anthony Gonzalez and Gael García Bernal.
Muertos has begun. It's the one night of the year our ancestors can come visit us.
I thought it might have been one of those made-up things. I was just...
Tonight is about family.
I am not like the rest of my family.
There's something that makes me different.
Great-great-grandfather, I want to be a musician, just like you.
All right, who's in there?
I'm sorry.
Welcome to the land of your ancestors.
Miguel?
We're your family.
You're skeletons.
You're alive.
All right, so that is the trailer for Coco. Yeah, let's, you know, I'm just going to say, I was not excited to see this movie just because of trailers like that one. Like
that trailer gave me a migraine.
I don't think any of these trailers made this movie look particularly good. And we'll get into it, I think, in mind, why I think that the movie is so much more successful than the trailers and the posters and the images have been. But anyway, Bill Graham, since you actually saw Coco, and I need a minute to collect myself, and I assume Mike does as well, why don't you kick us off with your thoughts on Coco?
Sure. I guess I'll start it with like a brief description of kind of what this film is about and then jump into my thoughts real quick. Basically, the film follows a young boy. His family has a tradition of being shoemakers and shunning music in all its glory, which they kind of point out humorously that, you know, in all of Mexico, they're the one family that actually like actively hates music and like will you know, anytime it's playing down the street, like his grandmother will like come out and shush people and stuff like that. And so he's basically living in this kind of world where his family tradition outlaws music because of some kind of thing that happened with their great great grandmother. And someone basically walked out of to pursue music in this way, and the young boy basically just has music in his heart. He plays in kind of like his little attic room thing. He plays the guitar and he worships this one specific music maker in Mexico that's kind of has this legendary status named De La Cruz. And so he grows up kind of idolizing this guy. And when he finally decides to kind of have enough with it, he goes and tries to play some music at this kind of big gathering of Mexican artists in a town square. And he mysteriously transports himself into Dia de los Muertos,
or the land of the dead. Himself into Dia de los Muertos, which
yes,
is Dia of
yes.
the Dead.
He transports yes, that's what I just corrected myself.
Okay.
And so from that point on, he has to figure out how to get back. He has to figure out how to right his wrongs. And, you know, kind of traditional storytelling from that point on, he goes on a journey like that. The film is insanely bright and colorful, especially when you get to the Land of the Dead. And it is, in my opinion, a hell of a lot of fun. The music is great. The voice acting is great. I love the animation. And I really, really enjoyed the story. If you don't know much about Dia de los Muertos, besides like the kind of kitschy sugar skulls and things like that that you've kind of seen in popular culture, this film really touches on like what that celebration really means and what it means to have like family and things like that. It does a really good job of exploring it in a lot of different fashions. And the film is just like, it really kind of touches your heart in a lot of ways. And I got super emotional watching it. Part of my family is Mexican. And so, you know, it kind of touched me in that way. But mainly it just spoke to me on a certain level. And I really, really enjoyed this film. Can't really recommend it enough.
All right. Michael Snydell.
I like this one. I definitely had some, like Brian, had some qualms going into this, not the least because they already made this movie. I swear that's the last time I make that joke. But Pixar is someone who is a company who, used to obviously, you know, do an A-plus film every year. And I'm less willing to say that their films have gotten worse than the fact that their formula has just kind of calcified to a point that even when it knows when to, you know, pluck the heartstrings, that it comes just it comes at exactly the moment. And there's a certain sense of copy and pasting. And I think Coco has a tiny bit of that, the copy and pasting. I think the second act in particular is just a little bit too manic, which is actually after watching Inside Out the same day I went to see Coco, that I kind of felt that one had a similar problem. But I mentioned the formula specifically because this is the first film in a long time for me that feels like it actually has a three-act structure. And it doesn't – and while there are a few times where things just happen, that's generally a problem I have with some recent Pixar films. It's just a sense that everything is just happening all at once and things don't feel motivated. And I think Coco does a really great job with creating a story that feels densely constructed from top to bottom. And that goes into everything from the iconography to the animation. It's been awesome to do research on some of the creation of this, just to find out how many references there are to, you know, Mexican culture, whether it's, you know, the grandmother, hitting Miguel with her chancleta, or the Alebrijes, or just this real sense of construction that just doesn't ever feel half-assed, and it's just really, really pleasant. Not only that, but this is also not only like visuals wise, this just bursts with an energy, you know, whether it comes from the music, which they got a lot of huge Mexican singers, and the original music is really, really great and really moving in this, and just gives this an energy that a Pixar movie hasn't had in a long time. Finally, I just think that these performances are kind of incredible. And, you know, as much as we can talk about representation, this is another, it's another example of just how, you know, hearing these Latino and Hispanic actors, you know, people like Benjamin Bratz and Gael Garcia Bernal, like hearing them voice these characters really does give this a sense of atmosphere and realism that just isn't there in a lot of things. And that comes from them, you know, randomly going into Spanish to say, you know, some like mild swear words and things like that. Really like this. I do think it falls prey to a few of the pitfalls of like just being a kid's movie. And I think I did want it to go a little bit further with some stuff. But it's the first time for me that the formula really feels like it's been shaken up. And damn, bring some Kleenexes.
I was not looking forward to this movie. I remember not liking the first trailer and then all subsequent trailers. There was that image that they show of him standing on the like the Marigold Bridge and looking at the city. I don't know why, but for some reason I was just like, "Eh, that looks boring." It even just in terms of like production design and everything just did not appeal to me. And so I went to see that. Also, I'll say the skeletons in all the pictures and stuff looked goofy and not in a good way. And I think that this is one of those moments where you realize how necessary, like, a big screen and proper projection and seeing things in motion is to really getting the feel for something. Because as lame as everything looked on my phone and on pictures that I saw on walls, and as like bad as the skeletons looked standing stock still in a photograph online, everything in this movie when it's in motion, like in the movie itself, is really good. All of my like the scene where he enters the land of the dead, when it's in motion and when it's big and you can see all the details that go into it and the lights and everything just shining, it's like truly jaw-dropping. And I think that their character animations for the human characters are really good. And the skeletons took a little bit to get used to, but once you did, they kind of had this... There's like a... I don't know if it's a meme yet or just something that people have started noticing. But like, in early cartoons that were mostly musicals, there were always a lot of dancing skeletons for some reason. Like, Betty Boop was constantly beset by like jazz dancing skeletons.
Yeah.
And this movie really leans into like the kind of cartoonish representation of a skeleton in that way. And towards the end, I was like, oh, I'm really digging these skeletons. Like, I like the things they're able to do with them. And I kind of like the way that they're being put out there. And I realized like how, when you're doing something like this, like the soul of the animation and the way that it moves and the way that everything works together is so important. And so I wish, I guess just like for the movie itself, though the movie is doing great financially and I don't have to worry about it, I wish that they had just done a better job of like selling it for what it actually is. But the story itself is so complex and multi-layered and dependent upon the custom of Dia de los Muertos that I think it would have been very difficult to pack it all into a trailer. So I think that just through the sheer, it's not confusing when you watch it because everything is actually laid out very well. But, you know, to have had to lay all that out would have taken like an entire trailer's worth of time before you even get to the fact that like this kid is there now.
Yeah. Also, the rare trailer that doesn't spoil anything.
Yeah. Like you kind of, you know, coming off that trailer, you have like no idea what the actual story is.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. But so, yeah, this movie was great. The voice acting was all wonderful. Gael Garcia Bernal in particular, I want to cite as like an MVP. Of course, none of it would work if Miguel wasn't properly voiced, and Anthony Gonzalez does a great job there. And yeah, I have I want to say that I have like a Mexican side of the family, but my grandfather like burned a lot of bridges in becoming the man that he would become, so I literally don't know. It's possible that they just crossed from New Orleans to Mexico for a little while, or they went from Mexico to New Orleans. So I don't know. I don't know what my connection to this culture is, but as an outsider, just through sheer like cultural literacy, I found it really interesting. And I know that I'd learned about Dia de los Muertos at my elementary school during one of our like, not world history, but just like social studies classes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, I had the barest knowledge. I was like, yeah, they get the altars and they paint their faces. So coming as a complete novice, this actually was like just a really interesting, I don't want to say primer, because one of the real virtues of this movie is that it doesn't seem to know that it's like a landmark piece of American animation. It treats this with the same level of like, what did you expect as like a Christmas movie? You know, it's a movie that takes place on this. Like, we expect you to kind of know everything, but we're going to give you the primer anyway. You know, every Christmas movie is like, oh, Santa and he's sleighing the reindeer and he comes down the chimney. And this movie is like, yeah, we got the ofrenda and the dead can come and talk with us. Then they go back and here's the marigolds, so they know how to get here. And so I liked that. I liked that it's a movie that properly melds the aspects of character, culture, and story together and doesn't let any of them kind of get overwhelmed by the other one. It doesn't operate with the kind of agenda like it's trying to be a cultural travelogue. It just it exists in a very matter-of-fact way, and it's really beautiful to see something like that, especially when the kind of mythology that they create out of all these various pieces is so compelling, and the story and characters and everywhere that they go is really, really awesome. And yeah, I enjoyed the hell out of this movie. I feel like I had a problem with it at first, but I can't even recall what my misgiving may have been. I think I think at some point I just at the beginning I was like, man, this voiceover is going on too long. Like this kid's explaining a lot. But like I said, it's kind of such a dense movie. Like it never really slows down. It's constantly introducing new information and new stakes and new concepts and ideas that like I just feel like someone at some point said, guys, this movie can't be 4 hours long. We just need to cut out the 2 hour prologue that explains this kid's backstory and just have him talk.
Yeah, because we got that Frozen short to shove into the middle or in the front of this thing.
You didn't watch it. Stop.
But seriously, like this kid, usually in a kid's movie, it's like, oh, my father was the greatest warrior. And this one's like, so my great, great, great grandmother was married to a guy. And I was just like, holy shit, we're starting a real long way back in this kid's history. But then, of course, as we get into the actual Day of the Dead festivities, it becomes very clear that, like, that's what the movie's about. It's about, like, the long arm of family and keeping memories alive and like, really, like, understanding where you came from and the reasons why people are the way they are. But, you know, when I first heard that, I was like, holy crap, how far back are we going?
Well, this reminds me because it's a reflection of kind of yourself in a lot of ways. It's a mirror, this movie, because Dia de los Muertos, you know, as I kind of learned in this movie, I too, Brian, I knew the barest amount about it. You know, I've only been to Mexico, I think, two or three times. And so, like, as a lot of people that are, you know, second or third generation removed from their grandparents immigrating over into this country and things like that, you know, I've kind of lost touch with my own culture and things like that. And so this movie really in Mexico and a lot of, you know, people that migrate from there to here, family is big. Like, family is really, really big, and you never quite understand why. And this film, and I'm not saying that all of Mexico is, you know, like 100% Dia de los Muertos, but in this film, they really kind of touch on like what family means and why. And in a lot of ways, it kind of reminded me to kind of look at my own family and realize how many people we've lost and how many people we just like know so little about. And in this film, it kind of touches on like, hey, like here was this person's favorite food and their favorite thing to do. Like just at the bare minimum, remember that about them, you know, what they look like, their name, favorite food, favorite thing to do. Boom. And in that way, it just kind of gives you this idea of, you know, because I don't know about y'all, but like a lot of people kind of wonder about like what is their greater impact on this world, you know, after we die and things like that. And this film kind of touches on that and it gives an answer.
Yeah, it really struggles with the concept of mortality and legacy in a way that like could be pretty heavy for a kid.
It's very heavy for a kid.
Guys, we should save this.
We're getting close. I understand. We're dancing around it.
I'm just saying. I don't know at what point, like, narratively, like, this quote-unquote spoiler section would begin. Because, like, as you said from the trailer, like, I don't know. It's hard to know what the movie's even about. Though I will say this movie, it is the type of thing that it made me reflect in a similar way, Bill, because my grandfather passed away a couple of years ago, and my grandmother asked me to come over to help her clean stuff out of the attic. And I guess, yeah, it's weird because they live in Queens, and I live in Maryland. We have cousins in between who live in New Jersey. They were not asked to come and help because I think that they just knew that they wouldn't. So I went up and I helped to clean out the attic, and I'm pulling down these boxes of stuff. And I said to my grandmother, like, so what am I doing with these? And she's like, oh, just throw them out. And I was like, but they're filled with pictures. She's like, yeah, just throw them out. And I'm like, but they're filled with documents. She's like, well, then look through them if you want. I don't know. Obviously, she was not in a place to be asked these questions. So I was like, all right, I'll sort through them and I'll figure out the wheat from the chaff.
Sure.
And my grandfather I never knew this, apparently, like, changed his name like the day before he married my grandmother. And so the man who I knew all my life as Thomas Gideon was actually born Tomas Rodriguez. And I was what the hell is this? And I brought it up with my mom because I was like, hey, look, I found this like box of stuff. And one of them is a name change notification that I guess they had to print in the newspaper that he clipped out. And she's like, oh, yeah, you didn't know that? I was like, no, I didn't know that. No one ever talked about it. She's like, well, I asked him why he did it once, and he just like started crying and said he didn't want to talk about it. And I'm like, oh, my God, what else don't I know? And she's like, I don't know what else is in there. And I found like requests from churches like all over the South and into Mexico that apparently he'd written to them looking for a woman who may or may not be a long lost sister. And like, so it's all this stuff that I just have no fucking clue about. And I'm watching this movie that's all about how you have to like, you know, keep a memory alive and like give praise to your ancestors and like keep them in your hearts. And I'm like, well, who the hell do I like? How do I even know? Like, and that was just, you know, he passed away a couple years ago, but he would have been like 90 this year. And I'm like, that's a very like, considering how much we know about George Washington, it is incredible like how thin that thread gets when you get down to a granular level of someone like me or you or our families. Like, you can lose touch with aspects of your family so quickly that you never even knew they existed in the first place.
Absolutely.
It's crazy. So that's an insight into my life story and how Coco made me think about it and nearly gave me an existential crisis. We should get into spoilers because I think we'll be able to talk even more about that in there. Any final thoughts or statements before we move there?
I was glad that they had the luchadors in there. I was glad about that. I wish they would have been in there a little bit more, but beyond that, I was happy about that. I don't know how they could have. I don't know, like maybe as like a little like clip afterwards, they could have had like a wrestling match between like skeleton luchadors. That would have been hilarious. But
it would have been pretty cool.
For me, the biggest technical, you know how all the recent Pixar films, it's like they have one technical breakthrough. Yeah. So Good Dinosaur, for instance, you had water.
Yeah.
The one for me in this one is I've seen a lot of TV shows and movies try to do people playing guitar.
Yes.
The guitar, the playing of guitars in this is mesmerizing. I'm not sure it was the exact notes, but seeing them do like actual chords and seeing them do like pull-offs and hammer-ons and like they were actually playing like adds. I don't think I've ever seen that in anything with animated with musicians.
I'll do you one better.
That was amazing.
This is better than like half the live action things. It's just like, hey buddy, like play the guitar, and then they only have like a long shot of the guy playing the first chord, and then they just go up to his head and he's like rocking out and like his hand is just moving.
I don't want to see that.
Yeah.
I don't know why they do that.
It's terrible. My favorite is still like people playing piano when you very clearly know that this person has no idea how to play the piano. Yeah. And so you see when they do the close up of an actual piano player's hands, it's all like fluid motions and everything is beautiful. Yeah. And then it cuts to a guy and his hands are obscured by the board and he's just like, da, 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 da. This looks kind of real, right? Another thing I'll say is that this movie has a lot of very decent people in it. And I think that a lot of times, like, in any movie where, like, a kid is rebelling against his family, or, like, you know, someone has to teach someone a lesson, and something has to happen, like, you have a tendency to, like, push people into the monstrous category. And I feel like, as much as I was like, just let this kid play guitar, I also could, like, understand where the family was coming from. And different members of the family were reacting with different levels of like empathy towards this child. And I think it was good to see. It was good to see that there wasn't like a unified front in terribleness, and that like people were complex and had good intentions at heart with almost every choice that they made.
It's kind of crazy too, that like, I must admit there were a lot of names I didn't recognize in here. And again, like reading, there are a lot of it's pretty great. And I kind of wish we could have gotten someone on here, you know, who's a Latino or Hispanic critic. But I just want to say, like, it's really interesting. It sounds like there are a lot of actors and actresses who are kind of deep cut pop singers in Mexico. And, you know, interestingly enough, that brings me to actually the so they always do dubs for all animated movies in different countries. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. So the Spanish version of this is done with the same, I believe all of the same actors. And so,
even John Ratzinger,
even John Ratzinger, but,
that's so not his name. Is it
Ratzenberg?
Ratzenberg. Ratzinger is the former Pope.
Yeah. Okay. But, the point being though that, this is that rare film where they could actually just dub it with the same actors. And
it's interesting you mentioned that, because I actually read a report from a Latino critic that was basically saying that this is one of the few films where you might actually want to seek out the dub, because just hearing them kind of speak in their native language and things like that. Not that all of those voice actors are Mexican first, but that's one of the things that, you know, if you have the opportunity after seeing it maybe the first time to just kind of go ahead and watch it again, this is going to be something that's probably going to be on the Blu-ray more than likely, you know, so you can actually sit down.
Well, yeah, they usually have like the dual language track, but it's going to be interesting for me because do they do the mouths differently?
I don't know. And that's the question, right? Like how expensive is it to do a dub? And, you know, or are they going to go the Princess Mononoke route where they just try and make it match?
Sure.
And so they have a literal screenwriter that just kind of, okay, that's definitely not going to work. Okay, how do I shorten that language? Okay, cool. You know,
how do I get the same thing across, but in a way where it's not, doesn't look crazy? What was it?
Yeah.
Was it in Japan? It was for Inside Out, and I feel like there was a thing going around about how, like, in America, the little girl didn't want to eat broccoli, but like, I think it was Japan. Like, apparently, broccoli is so universally beloved that they changed it to like green peppers.
Oh, really?
that's interesting.
That's amazing.
And that's kind of those multicultural things that like you just aren't exposed to if you're not part of another culture. So, you know, we take a lot of things for granted. You know, I think one of my favorite kind of learnings about like a lot of cultures is specifically like Asian cultures. If you're native from that area, they think cheese is like the most disgusting thing possible. Like they're like, wait, you let milk curdle and then you eat it?
Fuck
and
yeah.
they're just like, that sounds so bad on so many levels. And you just think about like how many like traditional Asian dishes have like cheese in them, and it's like, yeah, none. You know,
yeah,
the fake crab does not count, like, you know, the wontons and shit like that. Yeah. So yeah,
no, I found
I'm sorry,
the broccoli in Inside Out was changed to bell peppers in Japan because it's a more universally hated by children.
Bell peppers. What?
I mean, I don't like either, so I don't. Who am I to say?
Oh, boo! It, I will not take this
Brian.
Slander.
Of all of the opinions that I've had on this podcast, this is the one that freaks people out.
Okay. Guys, I'm sorry. Yeah, I found the story that I think Bill was talking about, so I just wanted to actually call it out instead of taking everybody's knowledge. So the piece that Bill was talking about, the dubbing piece. Which I remembered one detail is that, so you know how they continually say ofrenda in the film, and in the Spanish dub, they don't, you know, really italicize it in there. It just becomes part of the sentence. And so that's how it works with a lot of, you know, Spanish words that are kind of sprinkled into the English version. In the Spanish version, all of that sounds very natural. But the piece anyway is on Remezcla. And it's called Why the Spanish Dub of Pixar's Coco is Even Better Than the Original. And they did a review that's really good too. So I'd highly recommend that. And the writer is Manuel Betancourt. I'm sorry if I butchered that, but I wanted to actually say who wrote this.
Yeah, right. No problem.
Well, yeah, let's talk spoilers. We're an hour in. We spent 20 minutes talking about Frozen.
as we do.
Yeah. That might actually the Olaf's Frozen Adventure may finally be the time where we talk longer about. No, that's not true, because we definitely talked about World of Tomorrow for longer than 10 minutes. Anyway, so spoilers.
Coming.
Spoiler. I know. I'm trying not to think about it because I'm really upset I haven't seen it yet. Coco, spoilers happening now. So one of the interesting pieces of world building is introduced to us via Hector. A down on his luck kind of con manish type skeleton, a ne'er do well, a rake, a rogue,
grifter,
a rapscallion. And so Hector tries to cross the Marigold Bridge without having been cleared by customs because he doesn't have a picture on anyone's ofrenda. And he is caught and dragged back. And you kind of think that, like, I thought they were just like illustrating this thing. So I was like, oh, okay, that's cool. And then he comes back, and I'm like, oh, sweet. He's going to be a constant character. Because, you guys know me. I love a con man. So I was looking forward to that. Turns out that even though Miguel thought that Ernesto de la Cruz, the famous singer, was his grandfather. Great-grandfather? Just grandfather. Just yes. Great-grandfather.
No, yes. Great-grandfather.
Even though he thought Ernesto de la Cruz was his great-grandfather, he was not. Not only that, but Ernesto de la Cruz is a thief and a murderer.
Beloved thief and murderer.
He was beloved because no one knew he was a thief and murderer.
Sure.
Listen, he's not Jeffrey Dahmer, you know?
Yeah.
Is Jeffrey Dahmer the one who, or was it, no, Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy's the one who everyone's like, well, he murdered all his people, but he's so cute. What was I going to say? Now I'm thinking about Ted Bundy.
You're thinking about murderers now. You've gotten sidetracked, sir.
I know. So yes, Ernesto de la Cruz is a murderer. He actually killed Hector and stole all of his songs. Plot twist, Hector is actually the great-grandfather of this clan of people.
I should mention it is great-great-grandfather, because grandfather is the one that keeps beating him over the head, or grandmother is the
grandmother.
And then great-grandma, yeah. And then great-grandma is Coco, yes. And then her father is, so or supposedly was, yeah.
Yes, so like I said, this movie goes deep into the backstory.
Yes, it does.
There's a lot of stuff to know. It's like Game of Thrones. You got to know all the bloodlines. So,
but better.
So what happens is Hector had walked out on his family. Not really walked out. He had gone to go play music and never came back. And so great-great-grandmother Imelda was all, I'm fucking done with the music and musicians. No one in this family is allowed to listen to music. We're done. And the truth is that he didn't leave and never come back because he wanted to, but he was actually murdered because he wanted to come back to his family, but he could not because he was murdered. So all throughout the movie, Hector has talked about the fact that when the last person who remembers you on Earth either forgets you or dies, then you disappear and you go post-afterlife.
Yes, it is your final death.
Yes, and there is no concept.
This film kind of touches on that a little bit. Your first death is when you get buried in the ground. The second death is
your skeleton disappears.
What is the second death? Yes, your body like literally decomposes, and then your third death is when like nobody remembers you, yeah. And that's your final death.
So of course you're like, they're already dead. What does it matter? Well, what matters is that Hector, for apparently 90-ish years, has been trying to get home to see his daughter who he misses and loves, but he hasn't been able to because no one ever put his picture on an ofrenda because they hated him and for the wrong reasons.
And he's not part of those songs, so he's not remembered in that way either.
Exactly. So he only has ancient, decrepit Mama Coco. who it is highly intimated may either just be super old or possibly have late stage Alzheimer's, and she is forgetting who people are. And so he,
by the way, her skin is amazing.
Oh my God, the texturing is crazy. They even have the little hairs that you get when you get old on your chin.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that she looked goofy at first, but then when they started doing the close-ups, I was like, holy shit, that's amazing. And she's a sweet old woman, Mama Coco. But anyway, so what was I going to say? So he's trying to get back. He wants Miguel to put up a picture on an ofrenda and just be like, you know, you got to go and put it on so I can finally go and see my daughter because she is dying. And when she dies, she will have not be a living person who remembers me. And therefore, I won't even get to see her when she dies. Like all these other skeletons are hanging out together. I will go to the next place and then I'll never get to see my daughter again, which again, super dark. Very, like, I don't know how a child's going to react to this, because just sitting there in the theater, I was like, that is some dark existential shit that's happening. But luckily,
and it should be mentioned that we actually see someone actually hit their final death.
Yes.
Hector and him go out to go get a guitar, and like that was pretty chilling to actually watch. I was just like, holy shit, this movie's just going for it.
They didn't make it seem horrifying, which is nice.
No,
like he seemed at peace and he was happy,
graceful,
but like still, like then the immediate question is, where does he go? And he's like, no one knows, you don't come back from there. And it's like, holy shit, this is like, terrifying.
Yeah, and it's also just like it's that it's like terrifying in that way, but it's also like really fucking sad because it's like, wait, so no one remembers this dude? Like,
well,
how long has he been there? And you know, it sucks. It's like wow, no one has kept him on an ofrenda. No one remembers him. Like, what happened to his family? Did he have any offspring? Did he have any children? Did he have any relatives? You know, and so there's all these kind of questions.
My new great hope is that I can, at some point, take the speech from A Ghost Story and cut it with, like, video clips from Coco. So I can have the drunk hipster guy talking about how sooner or later no one will ever remember you, along with clips of people in Coco. And I think that will be the thing that finally gets me internet famous. Because it is, it's, I mean, like, you know,
message Ehrlich.
Yeah,
just be like, hey, I need you to do me a solid.
Because it's something, there was actually a book that I wanted to read. I believe it was called A Brief History of the Dead. And it had a similar thing. It was like it's A Brief History of the Dead by Kevin Brockmeyer, and it had this concept of like there's a place you go when you die where you get to chill out while people still remember you, and then after they all forgot you, then you move on to like the next plane. And so it was like a city of all these people, and then suddenly a lot of people start leaving the city very quickly, and no one is quite sure why. And there's like only a couple of people left, and there's this mystery about what the hell happened. And so that made me think of that. But anyway, so Miguel finds out that Ernesto's not his father, or is not his great great grandfather. All this stuff happens. And the movie ends with him being able to make Coco remember, make her remember her father long enough for him to live, and then for them to right the wrong of Ernesto de la Cruz's perfidy and murder. And,
which is like done really cleverly by having the kind of love notes sent to his daughter from like the road, and half of those are like poems that have turned into famous songs. And so it's very easy to be like, wow, like if you look at the send date and if you look at the publishing date, like obviously these are like 2 years ahead of time.
Yeah.
And yes, they did tour together, yes, it's pretty obvious that this guy wrote all of these songs that De La Cruz took credit for and made famous.
And so the town turns on
the way
De
they
Cruz,
do that is just so good.
And they all rally around Hector. So Hector's remembered. And so it was actually like, you know, it says like a year later. And it was actually kind of sad because you see Mama Coco's picture on the ofrenda. But then, you know, because this is the movie universe they've created, you see her and Hector. And even though he is, I guess, like 20-ish, and she in her skeletal form is like in her 90s, you know.
Yeah, I was curious about how that kind of works. Yeah.
I guess you just get the skeleton you're with when you die.
That kind of sucks, man.
I mean,
like, well, shit.
Like, these skeletons, like, you know, you could bounce around, you could throw your head to someone. Like, I feel like
once
you die,
yeah,
it doesn't really matter. My question would be, like, what happens if, like, no one had a recent picture of you, and so they had to use a picture of you as a child? Would you be able to get across?
I don't think that's hopefully they have some kind of lineage machine where they can kind of age you up and age you down.
They have like the FBI thing. And the other question is, does like a painting count? Like if a, like a picture, like, cause
sure,
photography is,
yeah, yeah,
recent.
Yeah. Daguerreotypes and shit like that. Yeah. Yeah. I do want to mention one thing that I found really clever, about this film is, you know, there is, and I'm sure Michael's kind of rambled on or thought about it in his head a little bit. But, you know, there is this classic withholding of information in this film when you see the image of potentially De La Cruz and as part of the ofrenda. And at first what you see is kind of you see this kind of statuesque kind of well-dressed person, right? And his head is ripped off. Well, then when they crack the picture, and you quickly kind of are like, oh yeah, it's you know, you can kind of read from the trailer like, yeah, it's probably De La Cruz. Like, yeah. And then when the picture is broken, it folds out and you see the kind of Dia de los Muertos kind of styled guitar. And so there's like no question. Like, of course it's going to be De La Cruz. And then you start to realize why the head is the only thing really kind of missing from that picture. And it didn't strike me until right around, like, shortly before the reveal that I started to realize that maybe it's Hector. Like, there's a reason why this guy has such a connection. And there's a reason why De La Cruz is like, I have a family. Like, he's got no clue that he's got a family because he doesn't fucking have a family. Like,
yeah, I thought he was just such a dick that he was like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
I guess the baby grew up and had babies of her own. Isn't that special?
Yeah. I was like, shit, man. Come on. Like that's kind of rough. And so that's kind of when I started to think about, like, why they're holding back the look of this guy's face specifically, and not like his whole body type and things like that. And so when they do that, like, kind of triple reveal of it being Hector, I was like, holy shit, like, they really hid that in a way that was both obvious and yet kept you as an audience kind of guessing. And it is one of those kind of classic, like, I'm going to reveal a little bit more information. I'm going to reveal a little bit more. And then my final reveal is something that you just didn't quite expect.
Yeah. I kept like waiting for them to like somehow redeem Ernesto de la Cruz. Mm-hmm. And like,
yeah,
when the kid's like, do you regret leaving your family? I thought he was going to be like, you know, it hurt my heart every day, but like, this is what you've got to do to be like rich and famous.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just going to be a really dark message about fame. But instead, he's a murderer.
I rhetorically wonder, too, if they didn't do the bait and switch and he actually had to contend with this guy being a bad guy, but like also having Hector become part of his family. I did rhetorically think about if they, like, I didn't think they were going to do that, but I thought that would have been kind of interesting.
So, like, you thought that they would keep Ernesto as his blood relative, but then he would, like, adopt Hector as his own?
I didn't think that was going to happen, but I thought that would have been cool.
That would have been cool. I was, yeah. I didn't realize this until after the movie was over, but, like, the guitar has like a gold tooth in it.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. Hector's yep. got a gold tooth.
Yeah.
And that oh. used to be Hector's guitar.
It's cool as fuck.
Yeah. And yeah. I was like, you know, I guess I just didn't fucking think about it at the time.
Yeah,
it was crazy. And there's little things like that are just so interesting and cool about this movie. And I like the fact that while Hector and Miguel have like a small falling out, they don't have, there's not like a moment where they kind of like really come to blows and like lose each other. You know, I kept waiting mm-hmm. for that to happen. I kept waiting for like a lot of easy storytelling mistakes to happen, and none of them ever did. And I think that goes yeah. a lot towards like how sure. much care and attention was put into this. Because even up until the point where he tries to murder him, Ernesto's not that bad of a guy. Like uh-huh. he believes this kid is his great-great-grandson, and he welcomes him with open arms and like invites him around and is like, I really hope you die soon because you're cool and I like hanging out with you.
Yeah.
And I was mm-hmm. like, oh, okay, so like, maybe that's what it is. Maybe he's going to realize that he should have been more present in the life of his family. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But instead he's a murderer.
Yeah.
And I had a moment with this movie where I was like, so heaven and hell don't exist here.
Yeah.
So like there's no, you can do whatever the fuck you want. And as long as people sure. remember you for it, you get to stick around.
Yeah. Which I would like to mention that I did read one critique that I don't necessarily agree with, but I wanted to bring it here to see what you guys think. Yes, so there was someone who this was actually just a WordPress piece that someone pointed me to. You know what? I am going to link to these when we, you know, when I tweet about the episode or something, right. I will link to these. I promise.
Yes.
Anyways, the point is this person really disliked the movie.
Okay.
And the thing that she talked about, her worries, obviously, about, you know, Pixar appropriating the culture and how much she liked it up until the point that we got to the bridge. And
Wait,
it became
bridge?
Clear. I'm sorry. The what do you call the flower? I'm losing my mind.
I think.
Yes, thank you. The Marigold Bridge.
So like
the
when
gateway
he crosses
from
over.
Yes, the gateway from the real world into Dia de los Muertos, or
it's just the land of the
whatever
dead.
The world to whatever oh, the land of the dead. Anyway, how that resembles immigration, and what that says about a class system that even in a movie about you know, the afterlife, there's still an idea that people would have to go through deportation as a main plot point, how there are people, how there's still a class system, which is, you know, enforced in this case through people who are remembered and people who aren't remembered. And so like this person, and I don't necessarily agree with it, but I think that there is something to be said that presenting something like immigration and specifically illegal immigration as what Hector tries to do, and presenting it as a joke is an odd choice. And I did not recognize it in the moment, but I'm just wondering if you guys had any feelings about that choice of specifically personifying immigration in that way, or the class system of the underworld, which is why I'm specifically bringing that up, because you started to bring that up a little bit, Brian.
I think that that is a specifically modern way to look at this, that the joyless will take now and then. I don't know. Like, because, yeah, it seems like a little, but I don't understand what the fucking problem is, really, because I don't know this culture well enough to know if that's not like what they think. Obviously, I don't think that they have a bureaucracy hanging out, but like,
sure.
If the concept is that if you don't have something up on the ofrenda, then your ancestors can't come and see you, then
there has to be some kind of pathway and gateway.
Right. Then you need that. Like, that's a thing. So it's either him hitting a fucking wall, which, yeah, a wall hasn't been politicized recently, or like he goes and then just magically appears back where he used to be. I mean, like, that's just the way it is. And I think that like concepts of movement of peoples across borders have been around forever. Like, the Bible has stories about that. And so to criticize it on that level is weird. Go ahead, Bill.
Specifically, that's like a very Central American kind of thing that happens to them, you know, sure. the pathway to America or North America in that way is kind of, you know, ask anyone around a border of the U.S. and Mexico, you know, about like what it means to go through like immigration services and like cross the border. Mm-hmm. And they'll probably have like something to say about that. They'll have some kind of image in their head. They'll have some kind of like, you know, you queue up and you gotta wait and you gotta talk to this person that's gonna ask you all these stupid questions. And then, you know, you come back from this place and you have to declare what you brought back. And, you know, like there is this tradition. That's just moving travel, through, you know, the border system. But I mean, specifically, it's very centralized to that area. And so I think the fact that they're kind of touching on that, everything has become very politicized in this culture and in this time period, specifically because of our president, who's done a lot of damage in that way. I don't think this film is specifically talking on that front. I think what's more interesting is this idea that culture still survives when you've passed on to the land of the dead. You still have like fucking trolleys and shit.
People
like that.
Playing
like,
music still.
Yeah.
It's not
like
it's not a coincidence that both places where Miguel lives among the living and in the land of the dead, that they are having a music contest. Like, music is important to every culture, as far as I know. I don't know a culture that specifically hates music.
I do have to say, I mean, like, in response to what you're mentioning about, you know, the movement of people is something, of course, that has been in generations and all kinds of cultures, but making a film specifically about Mexican people that has a fundamental thing involving illegal deportation. And as Bill said, like, whether you're talking about illegal or legal immigration, dealing with the possibility of getting a visa or getting citizenship, those are all things that are complicated and are difficult for people. And I can understand why someone would criticize that. I do think that what Bill's saying and what you're saying as well about the notion that culture can cross over, I do think that is potentially a more productive discussion. But I don't think it's quite as easy to wave it aside as projecting a politicization on something.
Unfortunately, we don't have someone here who's really well-versed in this. It's only a problem if it's something that they made up from whole cloth for the movie. Like, if the tradition of Dia de los Muertos is, we have their pictures here, but it doesn't fucking matter if their pictures here or not, they can still show up. Then yeah, it's problematic, I guess. You know, I still think it's a good, you know, symbolic, allegorical thing for the movie. But if that's really the way it works, like, if that's how Dia de los Muertos works, your family can't show up unless their picture's up there, then it's not a problem. It's just a really literal way to show it. And how else, and like I said, how else are you going to do it? You know?
Yeah.
You can't. Unless you just have a guy who doesn't exist, in which case, again, the movie is fucked. And, like, I don't think that there's anything about deportation in this movie, because he just simply never gets there.
Yeah,
There is a bureaucracy in place, but it's a bureaucracy it's a bureaucracy of separation rather than like catching you and pulling you back. Like, if he had run into Hector and Hector was like running through the streets of this small town and was like, you gotta hide me, kid, but then like the cops showed up and took him back to the land of the dead, then I think you could see it a little clearer. But the fact that he is magically kept in place by sinking into the pedals of this bridge,
Yeah, I was about to mention that. Yeah, like, I found that so I found that really, really clever that like he's just like no matter how hard he tries, he's just not going to be able to pass. Like sure. It's just not going to work. And so
I won't deny there's something a little darkly capitalistic about the Society of the Dead. It's the currency is memory. And therefore, people can fall beneath the cracks. And I think that, again, you'd have to find someone who's a scholar in this or knows a little better than I. But yeah, you know, sometimes you just, you know, I don't know. Like, everyone is equal in heaven in the kingdom of God. And that's why you don't have a movie like this made about Catholicism, because it would be boring. Like, this, my grandfather's dead. Well, it's all right. You can go and see him in heaven because as long as he was decently okay and repented on his deathbed, he's going to be there. It's like, oh, okay. Like, I don't have to worry about him disappearing. Nope. Lives there forever. Will I have trouble finding
Brian,
him? Nope. Everything is fine in heaven. Like, you're never going to have anything that takes place in heaven because heaven is boring. But this is a little more interesting because there is a thing there. There's a society. There's this really interesting concept of, you know, and the thing is that these people don't seem like they're in want. It's not like people are coming back and then selling their offerings. They're just kind of,
Well, hell no, they're not. Like, can you imagine if every year you get to go to your grave, visit your loved ones, and come back with your favorite shit? Like, yeah, you'd come across that border and you'd be like, fuck you. Like, I'm not selling this shit. This is my favorite.
Like, well, the other thing is,
you know, like this is awesome.
There's nothing, there doesn't seem to be anything that says that, like, Ernesto has the biggest house because he can afford it, and that Hector has a little house because he can't afford it. It just seems to be, like, their existential.
Yeah, like you said, it's the currency of remember or memory.
Yeah.
It's how well you are remembered.
Right. And I think what the movie is saying is that, like, everyone in this place is equal in, like, an existential say, but they manifest their wealth by how many people remember them. And so it becomes this thing of, like, have you made a big enough impact? Like, are you remembered fondly and loved by many? Or are you simply, like, disappearing? And, like, it may be through no fault of your own. Maybe a plague wiped out your family. I don't know. But, like,
I think it's also interesting because it is that catch 22 of, like, yeah, you are famous in the afterworld, not necessarily because you are remembered in the current, but because you're just fucking famous. Like, yeah. You know, the dead are just going to fucking fondly remember you just as much as the living, because you're Hector de la Cruz, like, and you're Frida Kahlo, and you're all of these kind of famous people that kind of surround Mexican culture. I thought it was unfortunate that, you know, and there kind of comes this thing of, like, how much appropriation do you make and how much do you try and make this kind of reality? As far as I know, there is not a Ernesto de la Cruz. Hopefully I'm not stepping on my own toe there. But Frida Kahlo is obviously a very widely known.
Bill, if there were an Ernesto de la Cruz, this would literally be a Pixar movie calling him a murderer. So I don't think you have to be concerned.
He's an amalgamation of a few different singers that already exist.
But so I thought it was unfortunate that they didn't have a little bit more of that. But I don't know how much, like, that has to become public works and how much that is tiptoeing into just appropriation and, like, just using these characters. So in that way, I was happy to see Frida mentioned, but I was also, like, kind of disappointed that they didn't have, like, a couple of more mentions. Like, again, I don't want to touch on it too much, but maybe a luchador you could have. I don't know.
I mean, apparently, you know, if you apparently during one of the scenes where Frida is, like, there's a bunch of other well-known artists of Mexican descent in there with her. I don't know who they are, though, because I just, you know, but it's like I could see Peter Lorre and Sidney Greenstreet.
Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Their visage is kind of recognizable then.
Yes.
Maybe they're not named.
In the skull face. It's like in Corpse Bride, that ugly worm that lives in her head is very clearly based off of Peter Lorre.
I never seen Gore's Bride, but go ahead. Okay.
Well.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. They never This is the worm version of Peter Lorre, but like, if you know who Peter Lorre is, you could be like, oh, that's Peter Lorre. And so I am certain that there are people who will look at that tableau and go, oh my God, I know who all those people are, you know? And sometimes that's even better than underlining it, because it's not an insult. It's like, I don't have to say who all these people are for all the people in the audience who don't know who they are, because you, the culture who I am pitching this towards primarily, will understand. And I think that also, you know, I don't think that this movie is appropriative for a number of reasons. No. First of all, many people who are part of the culture were a part of making it. Second of all, appropriation is usually doing something ignorantly to enrich yourself at the cost of making a mockery, or at least acting ignorantly. And I think that there's obviously enough research and care put into this that it's not appropriative. It's not.
Yeah.
When you appropriate something, you take it, oftentimes, if not unlawfully, then not willfully. Like, no one is handing it over to you. I don't give you a Christmas present and then say that you appropriated it.
Like, yes, which is why I was saying I'm glad that that's not even probably a conversation that's even happening now, because they didn't name drop a shit ton of, you know, famous Mexican people or something like that. And I do want to mention, Brian, you know, you were kind of mentioning, I guess, there is no heaven and hell. Obviously, this kind of tradition came about before the colonization of Mexico and Central Americas and things like that. So they wouldn't have had a heaven and hell, which all kind of boils down to, why is this happening around? And I don't even know if they necessarily name drop the you know, October 31st or whatever. I don't think they specifically mention a date, like a time period.
Well, no, they just say it's the Day of the Dead, which I think is.
But
that's not on October 31st, right? That's
October. It starts on it, and then it goes to the 2nd. So it starts on the 31st, and it's like a 2-day kind of festival. And the reason that is. Like a lot of things in kind of Western civilization, it's because basically Christian culture took over and tried to kind of warp and fit a square peg into a round hole. And we're like, how about while we dress up as like ghouls, you do your Dia de los Muertos thing.
Well,
and that's kind of
everything
how
having to do with Halloween was stolen from the Irish.
Like Halloween, all like, you know, all of that. But I mean, even down to like Christmas, like we could, like, if you just want to look
stolen from other pagans.
Yeah. And so like
Easter,
like,
same.
It's so funny because, you know, 150, 200 years, I don't think we would have gotten, I mean, obviously there weren't movies and especially not animated movies, but I don't think we would have gotten this movie like released on this wide of a scale. And so I just love that, like, we can go back and look at traditions like this, look at Moana, look at stuff like this, and be like, hey, put it out there. Like, let's celebrate it. Because I think a lot of cultural kind of melting pot and the way that, like, a lot of these traditions are forgotten are because they clearly butt heads with Christian kind of religion and ideology. And that's when a lot of that stuff kind of gets lost to the wayside. And it's unfortunate because, like, a lot of this stuff is really interesting. And there's things specifically in Dia de los Muertos to pull out of that culture and kind of, if not make it your own, just kind of celebrate it for what it is. Like, it's a celebration of, like, remembering family in a very specific way. And, like, you know, like you and I were talking about, Brian, like, that's, it's really self-reflective in that way, where you can just start looking at your own family and you're just like, holy shit, like, wow.
You know, it's funny because, like, in terms of a movie built around a religious remembrance or a religious ceremony, I think that this is 100 times more respectful than almost anything that's been made about Christmas in, like, the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because Christmas, you know, especially here in America, has, like, been secularized to the point where, like, the concept of Christmas is, like, everyone has to learn that it's not about presents, it's about family. But you know what? It's not even about family. It's like, you know, if you're a Christian, about the birth of your Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And it's also funny because they make it seem like the most important thing on earth when, at least in the Catholic faith, it's like third behind Easter. And it's just kind of crazy how it's become this big thing. But like this movie, every single like stitch of it is tied to the culture in a meaningful and like actually thoughtful, interesting way. You know, they talk about it being about family and remembrance. Guess what? It's actually about family and remembrance. Like, that's the whole thing. So I think, you know, if it was a movie about like a serial killer with a candy skull, it's like face mask or something, and it was called Day of the Dead, then yes, that would be appropriative.
That has to exist. That it probably on Amazon Prime. Are you kidding?
Buried deep in the bowels
the
of
asylum, the asylum is coming out with it next year. Don't worry.
Yeah, Robert Englund is in there somewhere in like a cameo. Anyway, yeah, like to me, that's appropriation. Like I honestly feel like someone trying to engage with the culture and the ideas of that culture is not appropriative. I think that that is how we create art and move forward and do new things. I think that if someone is being a dick about it, like someone at Coachella with a headdress, then yeah, that's appropriation and that's not cool. But I think you can tell just through watching the damn movie that that's not the case. Just because a film production involves white people but tells a story that is tied to a different culture does not innately make it appropriative. Especially because apparently Lee Unkrich, you know, who I think did, which one was it? Toy Story 3.
Yep.
Yeah. Apparently he said, I want Adrian Molina on this.
Mm-hmm. And Pixar did a lot of interesting things in relation to this film. They sought out a lot of people. Artists that actually worked at the company that were immigrants or, you know, of immigrant families, but also B, that artists that didn't have the support of their family and were still doing the thing that they loved. And so they sought out like the opinions of a lot of people in that way. They also spent a lot of time in Mexico. They also spent a lot of time doing research. They got a lot of historians and things like that. Like, you know, as much as we want to kind of say that Disney is this giant corporation and they do a lot of really shady shit, there are times when they do a lot of good. And I think this film is kind of the shining example of them, look, being a multi-billion-dollar corporation that is able to spend that kind of money because thankfully Pixar has enough of a reputation that they can make a movie called Coco that is about the Day of the Dead celebration, and they don't have to like really be nervous and wonder if this movie's going to make money. Because it's a Pixar movie. People are going to go see it. Like, that's kind of the end of the discussion as far as I'm concerned. Like, it's going to make money. Brave made money. The Good Dinosaur made money. You know, these movies just make money. And so that Pixar brand still has a lot of cachet in that way. And that's why they're able to make a movie like WALL-E and they're able to make a movie like Coco and stuff like that and just kind of take a chance.
It's the highest grossing film of all time in Mexico right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember hearing about that.
And if you hear something like that and you see it getting a I won't say rapturous, but an admirable reception from the community, like, can you really claim that it's appropriative? Like, or is it just people using their power? I'm not pointing this directly at you, Michael, but like, is it just people using their privilege and power to tell a story that otherwise wouldn't get told? Like, I think that, you know, that's the way to move forward, is to use whatever power you have and privilege you have to give voice to those who otherwise might not get it. And I think that that's what this movie did.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I don't think it's worth outright dismissing questions about.
Yeah, I would say
not necessarily appropriation, but specifically how some of that stuff is portrayed.
Yeah,
sure.
That's all.
And like we could spend a couple hours drinking and batting around ideas as to how to portray it. But like we said earlier, we're living in a world where like, if I were to go up to someone and say, like, build the wall, like, you know, and if it could be a contractor and I just want him to put a fucking new wall in my kitchen, but like someone would hear that and go, oh, he's a racist. Like, we're rapidly losing any nonpartisan, non-politicized middle ground that we have, to the point where like watching football on Thanksgiving was a political statement this year. It's just getting overwhelming, and like in a certain way I guess it's good, but also it's making the simple enjoyment of something that was created with the best possible intentions and with the greatest care and sensitivity into a difficult, trying thing, apparently. And I think that's the point at which we're going a little too far.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair.
I don't know. We'll see what problematic aspects we can find about Lady Bird. speaking of Lady Bird, in the next couple weeks, we're going to be reviewing Lady Bird and Three Billboards Outside of Ebbing, Missouri, and other things.
So look Shape of Water.
That. Yeah. I don't know. When is that coming out?
I can't wait for that. I think around Christmas time.
Yeah, every time I hear about Guillermo del Toro, I think about the fact that you said that he was the person you'd be saddest about if they died.
Yeah. He would definitely be that person. It's interesting because that film is another one of those films, if I'm not mistaken, that was supposed to have like an October-ish release, and they quickly decided not to do that, and they were like, nope, December for us. And I was like, well, shit. Like, oh, great. Put it when I have to see 20 other films in a week span. Thank you. So, yeah. I don't know. I'm looking forward to that one. I'm also looking forward to Lady Bird and Three Billboards and anything else we can kind of get our hands on during this time, because thankfully Justice League dropped and it is fastly disappearing from my rearview mirror. Yeah. So
now we're on to the good stuff. The hopefully...
The quote-unquote good stuff.
What's
the
Justice
the presumably
League?
Good stuff.
Anyway, fuck off, Michael. if I can't talk about the Frozen short, you can't talk about Justice League.
Okay. Oh, no.
And I can talk about them both, because my time is not valuable to me at all. There are times when I think about like what I'm doing with my life, and I'm just like, my daughter is growing older every minute that I'm here. Oh God, yeah. As a father, the song "Remember Me" in this movie, like I think it was designed to like gut me in some way. But I will say, I didn't cry during this movie. I don't know. I mean, I'm dead inside.
Oh man, I wept hard.
I got close a lot. Oof. But I never tipped over the edge.
When it's first revealed that Hector is actually his family and they start to celebrate in that way, and then like the final like 15 minutes of this movie, I was just a mess. I was just like, holy shit, this movie is just
maybe
in all spots.
Maybe I was still so residually mad off of Frozen that I just didn't get there. Mike, you were gonna
Ryan,
say
I need someone to make a supercut. Jesus Christ, a supercut of every time you said, maybe I'm dead inside. Because it's been hundreds of times.
I mean, first of all, a supercot is called a bed. And you can get one at Casper.com.
It's called a Casper.
Right. All right.
Coupon code FilmStage. What if we just started saying that Casper was our sponsor? And like enough people went there and started typing in film stage that they were like, wow, I guess we should make these people.
I hate to plug another podcast, but if you listen to the Justice League podcast of Blank Check, they have a middle break where they advertise for Casper that is the funniest thing I've heard in a long, long time. And it's stupid and silly. And if you listen to that podcast, you will get their humor. And it is glorious.
Is that the one where he pretends to be Al Pacino?
Yes.
Oh, my God. All right. We're leaving. It's over. This has been the Film Stage Show, brought to you by MUBI, our actual sponsor. Mubi,
we love you, Mubi.
Mubi is great. Mubi puts up with me being their spokesman on this. And they have yet to actually just hand me a script and say, please don't deviate from this, which is great.
Yeah.
So yeah, Mubi. 30-day free trial. Go to mubi.com/filmstage. And you will get access to the coolest curated online film cinema exposition service around. Someone's getting tired. And yeah, Mubi introduces a new film each day. You have 30 days to watch. It's pretty great. They have some awesome stuff on there. Check it out. And if you would like a 30-day trial, all you got to do is go to mubi.com/filmstage, and we will give that trial to you. So once more, that is mubi.com/filmstage. Also, don't forget to go to our Patreon, and that is at patreon.com/filmstageshow, the Filmstage Show, and give us your money. Help us to do
give
stuff.
Us your money.
I'm going to, like, I got to find a song to just put under me saying, give us your money.
Or you could just have money. have a clip of Tom Cruise saying.
Don't.
No?
No.
Okay.
All right, Bill, just say it.
Wait, don't you mean Cuba?
Show me the money?
No, because Cuba says it, but then Tom Cruise screams it.
Okay.
Because remember, Cuba's all let me hear you say it, Jerry.
He's like, there it is. There it is. There it is.
And then he's like breathless at his desk, and he's like, show me the money!
Yes.
Anyway, this has been our dramatic recreation of Jerry Maguire. For more great content like that,
move over, Blake Check.
/thefilmstageshow and give us your money. Is that a classic movie? Could we review that one of these months?
My girlfriend had a question. What is technically a classic movie? Is that black and white, or is that what?
It's whatever we want it to be.
Yeah, it's kind of like anything that anything I think from before our first episode.
Ah. Okay.
Was that on the spot? Because that was pretty good.
Yeah.
And then maybe something that
classic,
like,
to us.
At least one third of us have not watched.
I don't know if it has to be that much, but yeah. But anyway, we're gonna be doing It's a Wonderful Life, clear classic. That's gonna be happening in December.
I don't know.
And we'll be doing,
I don't know if it is.
It's 100% a fucking classic, Bill.
Anyway, the jury's still out.
We're leaving. It's over. I hate all of you. I mean, it's been a real pleasure. Let's tell the fine people at home where you can be found between now and the next time that we jump into your headphones or your iPod speaker or whatever the hell you're listening to us on. Bill Graham.
You can find me researching more about Dia de los Muertos and asking my family about that during the Christmas break on Twitter at CableBFG, and then also on the Patreon page.
Yes. Don't you mean the Slack channel?
Patreon Slack channel.
All right. Michael Snydell.
You could find me on Twitter at @Snydell. I'm still making my way very slowly through some screeners and some bigger movies at the end of this year. So if you want to get my thoughts on any of those and which ones I actually liked, you can follow me on there. And I'm on the Slack channel as well. So feel free to reach out. And Letterboxd as well, I guess.
Yes. I too am on the Slack channel. Today I told everyone that Let's Be Cops made $82 million in America, an additional $55 million overseas. So if you want that kind of crazy knowledge in your head, then join us, patreon.com/filmstageshow. Talk to us in the Slack channel. Find me on Twitter, where I will live tweet all of my breakdowns. That is at Brian J. Rowan. And Letterboxd. Oh, shit, I haven't updated my Letterboxd in like a month. Don't go on Letterboxd just yet. Give me some time. I'll fill it in. Ladies and gentlemen,
it's a Christmas miracle.
Yay. Join us next week when we're talking about either Lady Bird or Three Billboards or maybe something else. But those two are definitely coming up. And thank you so much for putting up with our shit. Will you stand above me? Look my